This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega.
The recent uprisings for racial justice have sparked conversations about systemic racism and white supremacy in all parts of our lives, and that includes the classroom. Many Americans are starting to re-examine what they learned in their history textbooks and what was left out. Everything from the 1921 Tulsa race massacre to the legacy of redlining in many U.S. cities. And that's prompted educators to rethink how to teach a more complete history of the United States that includes the experiences of Black and Indigenous people and other communities of color. So today we gathered some history teachers to talk about how their favorite subject is changing. LeGarrette King is a professor of social studies education and the founding director of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education at the University of Missouri. LeGarrette, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us are two high school history teachers, Jessica Rucker of E.L. Haynes High School in Washington, D.C., and Matt Bockenfeld of Fishers High School in Fishers, Indiana. Jessica and Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Matt, let's start with you. The school year is over, but before it ended, how are you helping your students make sense of what's happening around them right now?
Yeah, well, it's absolutely a difficult time. And within the context that I teach, it's a majority white school and a majority white community. And so there are some pretty significant challenges that we faced in terms of understanding and the reaction that people had. And so I think that the place that we started in my classroom was just for what I needed to do. We needed to start with just dispelling myths. And so I just I've had lessons in the past where I wrote Dr. King's quote up on the board: "A riot is the language of the unheard," and we processed that together. We talked. I've brought in guest speakers to sort of think through what we're seeing in this nation. And then another piece is that we talk a lot about whiteness in my class because that's the majority of the students that I serve. And white kids need to interrogate how whiteness works, what it does to us. It's a lot of people think that whiteness is a neutral experience, and that is an enormous problem. We can't begin to confront the issues that we're facing right now until we admit that whiteness is not a neutral experience, that it is an active experience that we have.
Jessica, what about you? How are you incorporating talking about some of these very difficult and complicated issues that are happening, including police brutality, with your students?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. First, Matt, shout out to you for discussing whiteness. So I teach an Introduction to African American History and Culture course at E.L. Haynes, which is a high school located in Ward 4 of Washington, D.C. I work with Black and brown youth. And we're always talking about race because of the ways that we are raced as individuals. So this particular current moment allowed us to deepen our conversations, and I've identified, and students identify themselves actually as cultural practitioners and custodians of justice. They, like me, understand that deep learning is not simply about classes in schools, but it's about building relationships to break down barriers erected by systems of oppression. So this current moment has created an opportunity for us to revisit different eras that have been thematic in U.S. history. And I describe myself not as a U.S. history teacher, but as an us history teacher, because this is our history, and students happen to be living through another iteration of white supremacy. And we similarly have been reflecting on Dr. King's statement as the patron saint of nonviolence, who even reminded us, that a riot is the language of the unheard. And so one of the things I've been asking students to do is to harness their voices and to remember that their lives and experiences matter, that this is a time of deep grief, but also an opportunity for us to celebrate in our collective joy, because we've resisted these conditions which have existed in this nation for generations, but we're also inspiring a different form of communication. Because for us, nonviolent direct resistance has resulted, no matter the time period, in white supremacist violence towards us. And we're having a conversation now that our lives will no longer be contingent upon convincing enough white people that we actually deserve human rights, if I could borrow from Nicole Hannah Jones. So that's what learning is looking like for us.
LeGarrette, let's break this out for the national, at a national point of view here. There is no national U.S. history teaching curriculum. Is that correct?
No, there's not. And I think when we began to talk about a national curriculum, we have to be very careful, because sometimes that can backfire based on the story that we're trying to convey to our students and to our society. So historically, many politicians help develop, or they vote on the types of curriculum that we will receive in schools. And typically those curriculums are kind of focused on this progressive Eurocentric narrative. And I think throughout the years we have conceded to say, hey, the U.S. has made some progress, or we've made some mistakes, but we've always fixed these mistakes and racism is over, right? So while there's not necessarily a national curriculum, the National Council for the Social Studies does have 10 themes that they recommend for all history classrooms throughout the country.
And Matt, LeGarrette, I'm wondering whether or not there are very specific things that should, that have been left out. I think back to Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States, which some of us may have read in college, which for many people was the first time they had heard about a lot of the stories that have been left out of our high school and junior high and even elementary school history books. So are there specific things within that you feel deeply concerned about that have been left out of the textbooks?
Right. Well, instead of just pinpointing various different people or events, we have to look at narratives. And most of our narratives do not connect the past to the present. So, of course, when we're talking about systemic racism, we don't talk about the connection between slavery and today's society as the 1619 Project does. We do not name aspects of racism, white supremacy, anti-blackness within our curriculum, and we don't tie those particular situations within throughout our narratives.
Jessica, have you had discussions within your department or with school leadership about making major curricula changes across the board in the upcoming school year, given everything that's happening?
Yes, I have. That's a great question. One of the gifts of working at E.L. Haynes High School is it's a high school that is rooted in leveraging our teaching and learning through a race and equity lens. And recently, actually, I proposed a year-long elective course that will center Black lives and facilitate an E.L. Haynes-specific student-led movement towards transformational justice, healing, Black joy, equity-driven direct action, et cetera, et cetera. But even before proposing this course that I want to teach this fall, I was already teaching an Introduction to African American History and Culture course. And one of the things I love about our electives department is that we use art to help visualize the problems that we are fighting against, to help us and our students imagine a better future, to amplify messages to a wider audience. And this is work that Haynes has been doing since its inception. And this particular moment, the 2020 uprisings have allowed us to even push our thinking even further as a school within the electives department and even with some upcoming collaborations with our history department as well.
Matt, you mentioned talking as your majority white students and you're a white teacher, talking to them about interrogating whiteness and what that means right now. But I'm wondering, what about white colleagues? How are other teachers that you know sort of processing this? And are you actively trying to engage them in this topic?
Yeah, that's a phenomenal question. That's really been the project of this summer. I've begun a book study with about 45 teachers in my building. Almost all of them in the book study are white, and we are asking real hard questions about the ways that we have been complicit in perpetuating injustice, failing to intervene when we needed to, and asking hard questions about our curriculum. When I came to this high school, the first time that Africans really showed up in the world history curriculum was the Middle Passage, the origin of the transatlantic slave trade. To teach history in that way perpetuates white supremacy. And so we've been in a multi-year overhaul of the curriculum to really interrogate our own complicity in the system and to work to be anti-racist within the system.
Speaking of anti-racism, LeGarrette, we've been hearing a lot of talk about that and people saying that it's not enough just to say they're not racist, but to be actively anti-racist, particularly since George Floyd's killing. I'm wondering, LeGarrette, how do you incorporate anti-racism into education? What would an anti-racism curriculum look like?
Well, I think for one, one way is that we have to totally revamp our U.S. history curriculum. I think a very popular axiom out there is that Black history is U.S. history. And while we understand that sentiment, right, in terms of you cannot tell the story of America without telling the story of Black America, that is a fallacy in the ways in which we practice that, right? Because Black history is not American history in the ways in which we construct it now. So in many ways, what is historically important to white people is not historically important to Black people in the terms of, let's say, July 4th, right? 1776 means exactly nothing, right, to the majority of African Americans who were particularly enslaved during that particular moment. So it's about transforming entry points. It's about transforming, as Matt said, there's implications to teach. To the first time students are introduced to Black people is through enslavement, right? Those are serious implications in the ways in which we understand ourselves. So we first need to totally transform the U.S. History curriculum and find different entry points, different people, understand historical people in very nuanced and, you know, different ways. And that starts with the teachers really examining themselves and their identities.
Wondering, Jessica and Matt, curious about your thoughts on how you would advise teachers who may still be relying heavily on textbooks that might be outdated, teachers who are going to have to confront their student, or I wouldn't say confront, but really have to start teaching again pretty soon, whether it's online or in person, and they're going to have to confront these ideas in the classroom. Any tips, Jessica, for how teachers can improve this fall?
Yeah, so first, this country was founded on ideals of white supremacy and capitalism. And so unless we are going to teach the long history of Black resistance, the Black freedom struggle and white supremacy, I think we're helping to sustain the problems that this current movement is designed to uproot. There are people's historians online, many classes facilitated through the Zen Education Project. Author Jean Theo Harris suggested the series, and they're on Fridays. And I would suggest that teachers get involved, because each of these 75-minute classes also offers breakout rooms for 12 minutes to talk about what participants are learning, to discuss the content, but to also push our pedagogical lens that in a way that it centers the lives of the people who have made this country what it is today, specifically Black and brown folks.
Matt, what about you? How do you propose, particularly dealing with folks who may be resistant to some of these ideas coming up in the fall?
You know, I would just tell teachers that you cannot serve your students until you see your students and see yourself. So if you haven't, you know, reflected on your own identity and how whiteness works, it doesn't matter how good your intentions or how big your heart is, you will do harm. And so you just need to begin a process of reflection and growth. The water's warm, like, come on in, we need you in this fight. This has been an age-old, you know, fight for equity and justice and human dignity, but we can't do that without white people. So we really need you to get involved in the fight. And that means read James Baldwin, read Ta-Nehisi Coates, get involved.
And have your students been receptive so far, Matt? We've got just a couple of seconds left.
Yeah, students crave an authentic, genuine confrontation with history. And so when you give them that space, they jump on it.
One of the things that often gets talked about are holidays, particularly when it comes to the school year. So I want to sort of ask a little bit about some of the ways that we can rethink these holidays, particularly in the classroom. Jessica and Matt, we've got July 4th coming up. We just passed the celebration of Juneteenth a couple of weeks ago. There are lots of questions about whether Columbus Day should even exist and or be replaced with Indigenous Peoples Day. How do each of you approach teaching national holidays like this that on the one hand seem pretty harmless, and think when I'm thinking back to when I was a kid and you see Thanksgiving and it's just such a peaceful scene between, you know, the pilgrims and the Indians, and there's so much more to it. So how are each of you approaching these complicated holidays?
Yeah, so first, I grew up in a household where July 4th was not called the 4th of July. It was called the 4th of July. And what my mom wanted me to see that in 1852, when Frederick Douglass gave his speech, which is now popular and famous, which wasn't then, that he was talking about the hypocrisy and this two-ness of the United States. What to the slave is your 4th of July? I mean, it's a reflection of the gross injustices and cruelties that have been visited upon Black people. And in terms of teaching about holidays, there's a great book by Teaching for Change, Moving Beyond Heroes and Holidays. And so I tend to take that kind of mentality and approach and even asking students why certain individuals or groups are commemorated, whether it's through holidays or through memorials, and then really challenging why individuals become like messianic figures in our historical memory. And then to the piece around Indigenous People Day, that's how we honor it. One of the funnest lessons I do with students is we analyze a song, Oceans by Jay-Z. And in that song, he says, the only Christopher we acknowledge is Wallace. I don't even like Washington's in my pocket. And I don't want to waste time analyzing it here, but it speaks for itself. So that's my pedagogical approach to holidays.
Matt, what about you in terms of dealing with some of these more complicated realities that these holidays represent? And even we could even extend this to what's happening, to Jessica's point, with monuments and symbols that we're seeing across the country that are being literally torn down as we speak.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say that the conversation around holidays like Columbus Day remind me a lot of the conversation around Confederate monuments and statues. The way we memorialize our history matters. This idea that we will forget our history if we don't have, you know, Robert E. Lee on horseback, you know, framed in the middle of a city center, it's ridiculous. You don't learn anything from standing in front of a statue and looking at it. You know, we're not at risk of forgetting our past. We are at risk of misremembering our past. And that is what these holidays and these monuments do. They build a mythical past that we don't have to be rooted in. The fact that so many white Americans feel like their identity is threatened by the dismantling of these old systems of power is silly. You know, we can build our identity in something more just than something like the Confederacy or what happened to Indigenous people on the land that we're sitting in right now. So I don't have the power to dismantle holidays. So we just talk about it and we try and have just a really honest conversation. Why do we remember this? Why do we not remember this? How is this holiday leading to us misremembering what actually happened?
And LeGarrette, want to round this out with you because I think that I'm thinking of the parallels between how education and history is taught and somehow sometimes how media frames conversations about race by separating them from other conversations, right? And I think that happens often with months like Black History Month or Hispanic, quote unquote, Hispanic Heritage Month, right? Where we set aside time to, in theory, honor cultural icons and understand. But that seems to be it. Like, we're just setting aside these couple of weeks for Black history or Hispanic heritage. There is no Indigenous Heritage Month, right? So we don't even reflect on that. How should we, or how should educators think about incorporating these histories throughout the year and not just limiting it to one moment in 12 months?
Well, I think the biggest misnomer about Black History Month is that Black History Month is supposed to be the only time in which we celebrate Black history. Now, when Carter G. Woodson developed Negro History Week in 1926, the idea was that week was the week where we were supposed to reflect and present about all the Black histories we learned throughout the year. Right. So somewhere throughout history, we kind of switched it up a little bit. So February is really the time where we're supposed to reflect about the year long curriculum in which we learned about Black people through the other 11 months. But Black History Month is extremely important, you know, for all different types of reasons and all these other ethnic celebratory months, because there is a time where we can kind of expand our knowledge that we didn't really have much time throughout the year. But again, just like I mentioned before, it's all about transformation and transforming the curriculum, where we not only learn history, we learn histories. And that's a very important, you know, concept, where we delve in and begin to explore the multiple histories that make up our country.
And I'm also wondering, within those histories, or that those history months, LeGarrette, whether or not the figures that we are taught about really represent the complete, or a more complete picture of, for example, Black Americans' contributions, or Latino contributions to this country. I'm thinking, you know, Black History Month comes around and we hear about Martin Luther King, but are we hearing about the Black Panthers? Are we hearing about other figures in Black history that may be more controversial, if you will, and I'm putting that in big air quotes, than who we usually tend to admire during those months?
Well, the U.S. history curriculum is focused on kind of this Eurocentric narrative. Therefore, despite the fact that we have had an educational policy that looked at the quantitative progress, but not the qualitative progress. And when we add various different Black people to the curriculum, typically those Black people are constructed in a way not to hurt white people's sensibilities, right? To kind of continue this Eurocentric progressive narrative in which we have constructed throughout the curriculum. So yes, we need to explore the diversity of Blackness within Black history, right? Because sometimes when we look at Black history, we center only Black males who are middle class, who had Christian beliefs, who are heterosexual, and who are able-bodied, and we miss out on the intersections of Black history, right? Black women, Black LGBTQ people, and all these different diverse ways in which Black history can be explored, and that there we can really understand the humanity of Black people throughout. And is a little bit more complete and nuanced.
Matt Bockenfeld is a history teacher at Fisher's High School. Jessica Rucker is a history teacher at E.L. Haynes High School. And LeGarrette King is the founding director of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education at the University of Missouri. Thanks to you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.